Hi, I'm Eric Jansen. Welcome to Out in the Bay. With all the hoopla over Behind the Candelabra, the HBO movie about Liberace, we thought we'd bring you our 2010 feature on Liberace, in which you get to hear Liberace himself, not Michael Douglas, and lots of Liberace's own virtuoso piano playing. So sit back, close your eyes, relax, and enjoy. Hello, I'm Eric Jansen. This week on Out in the Bay, we honor one of the most popular, successful, and gayest entertainers of the 20th century. Although he wasn't out, that concept barely existed in his lifetime. How big was he? He was the world's highest paid pianist. Barbara Streisand opened for him in 1963. He influenced Elvis Presley. Known for his flamboyance, he was credited with starting Las Vegas Glitz. In 1954, his television show aired in 20 countries and on more than 200 U.S. television stations. He broke attendance records at premier concert halls, including Radio City Music Hall and Madison Square Gardens, from the 1950s through the mid-80s. I'm speaking of Liberace. Here he is, backed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra in 1983. I visited the Liberace Museum to learn the story of this phenomenal entertainer and to see his spectacular costumes, cars, and pianos.
Tanya Combs. I'm the director of the Liberace Museum. Liberace opened the museum in 1979, on Easter Sunday, as a matter of fact. He had lots of interesting things that he thought the public would love to see, and you're about to see that. We're always asked, how did Liberace get into costumes? You know, many of his fans remember the show back that it was a black and white show in the 50s, and he just wore regular tux like most of the musicians of the day. He was still a showman even at that time. But he had a performance at the Hollywood Bowl in 1952. And I don't know who suggested, but as he was rehearsing, someone said, you know, as you look down there, all the audience will see all these musicians in black, and you're the star, you and your brother George, so maybe you should wear white. So he thought about it, and he agreed. Liberace joked about everything. So that night, he was walking out, and they're snapping pictures, and they're saying, what is it with this white? You know, what's up? And he was joking back and forth and said, well, I'm the star. And someone yelled, hey, what's it going to be next time? Now, he really didn't think about that question.
Sounds like a challenge.
Exactly. But he quickly looked at his sister, Angie, and she had on a popular fabric of the day, gold lamé. So he yelled back, gold lamé. Took a few years for that to come to pass, but with this wonderful gold jacket that we feature as our first artifact as you walk into the costume gallery, he wore this gold lamé jacket. And it's, while it is a gold lamé jacket, it's really not that unusual. In the 50s, it was huge. Keep in mind, musicians, with the exception of maybe Cab Calloway, who happened to wear white, most of them wore a black tux. Well, Liberace wore this gold lamé jacket, and he said, you know what? From then on, they wanted more and more, and I gave it to them. When our guests round the corner after seeing that gold lamé jacket, this is the first stunning costume they see. I mean, it's really quite spectacular. It's made out of pink, well, dyed pink, chicken feathers, and if you look up around the neck, there's a stand-up collar, and that's turkey feathers. This particular costume was worn at Radio City Music Hall on Easter Sunday, and he stepped out of what appeared to be a Fabergé egg and walked down 12 steps with that. Notice there's a huge train on the back of this costume, and it, of course, was flowing down the steps as he walked down. You'll notice the inside is all lined with sequins. Quite beautiful.
Did he show, I mean, because you can see there's so much work on the inside of this thing.
Exactly.
Did most people even see that?
Yes, they did. You know, he would hold, the cape was always taken off. Keep in mind, the weight of these costumes, there's no way he could play the piano wearing the cape. So, the cape was taken off. It was always held open for the people to see the spectacular.
With a flourish.
Exactly. Also notice the boots match the costume. They were always, beautiful. They usually had a 2 to a 3 inch heel, making Liberace appear taller and bigger than life. Liberace actually was a child prodigy. He started playing piano at 4 years old. And, of course, his parents quickly realized, gee, this is a real talent. They were a poor family, and they were able to get Florence Kelly, a well-known instructor in the West Allis, Milwaukee area, to listen to Liberace. And she agreed to teach him. And she said, in no time, he surpassed anything she could possibly teach him. Well, it's interesting because over the years, a lot of people said Liberace, he couldn't play. Not so. He actually had a long-running scholarship to the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. Once again, Liberace was smart enough to know your average man is not crazy about classical music. So by combining classical with popular music, he got your average man to listen to some classical as well. It's what the public liked.
And he had a lot of female fans. Let's not just say the average man.
No, that's exactly right. Well, and it's funny because he really was like a matinee idol at the time. But his parents divorced very early on, and Liberace took care of the mother. And let me just say, since I'm a mom, I can tell you, when you see that and you see a son that's so good to the mom, of course you're going to love him. And the ladies did. But he would joke, and he'd say, it's just not old ladies out here. So he'd always joke, we have some video, and he would say, hey, there's some men out in my audience. So, yeah, he appealed to a lot of people.
Thank you so much. As I mentioned earlier, I've always loved the classics. In fact, that was my first introduction to music in life. And I'm about to play for you what is perhaps the world's foremost piano classic. And yet I've been told that this is the first time this composition has ever been performed with the London Philharmonic Orchestra.
The president of the Liberace Foundation for the Performing and Creative Arts.
You said you have a couple of favorites here.
I do. I'm a fan of purple. The one that we're standing immediately next to is one that Liberace wore in his final performances at Radio City Music Hall. A purple ostrich feather, variating from white to deep purple, and a costume that's just stunning underneath. And the fun thing about this is that he was flown in over the audience, and even at 67 years old, and unfortunately already very ill from HIV-related complications, said, "Mary Poppins, eat your heart out." So he still had a gift for flair, even at that late date in his performance career. Mm-hmm.
He finally did die of AIDS, but that was not on his first death certificate.
You know, it was a time in our history where nobody was diagnosed with AIDS because the words were not even fully formed in our culture or in our knowledge. The complications related to HIV, which is what the final death certificate even says, we know now to be there's different diagnoses associated with that. But when we think about 1987, when he passed away, unfortunately, there was not enough attention being given to the disease in any shape or form, and medical experts were not able to fully clarify exactly how he did pass away.
And he never acknowledged, nor did his family, as far as I'm aware, that he was gay.
Not publicly. He gave so much to his audience in performance and so much joy and heart and life that really people just seem not to fixate on it like we sometimes fixate on celebrity private lives now. He had definitely an active social life, an active private life, but he really chose to keep himself professionally kind of above that and just deliver the show that he loved to give so much. Because when you look at these costumes, the one that weighs 200 pounds, he was performing off adrenaline, and the audience was giving him that, gay, straight, or otherwise.
What are these costumes valued at? You have any idea?
Well, truly priceless now. Some of them, the black diamond mink that you see adjacent to this purple costume that I love so much, when it was built, it was about $750,000.
$750,000 for one? And this is how many years ago?
That one was built for him in 1974.
Liberace, I mean, he did things right. We have this gorgeous costume with over 40,000 hand-sewn Swarovski crystal rhinestones in the lining. The lining alone weighs over 125 pounds. Then you're adding fur, which, believe me, adds weight to this costume. But the reason I wanted to point this one out is because we have a car in our car gallery covered in the rhinestones, and we have a beautiful piano in our costume gallery that's also covered in the rhinestones. As I said, he did everything first class. Everything matched. It was a lot of fun. You know, his fans, they just loved it. I mean, yes, he was a fantastic pianist, but they loved costumes.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to playing a lot more for you, and I will. Oh, yes, yes. But you want to know something? I've done a couple of numbers, and I'm warm already. So, you know what I was thinking? Why don't I slip out and get into something more spectacular? What do you think? All right?
I see he's got at least one outfit here that he's got shorts. That must have been for when he was performing in Miami.
The hot pants. Red, white, and blue hot pants. You know, one Halloween he dressed as a drum major. And so someone, they thought it was such fun, suggested, gee, why don't you, you know, wear hot pants? So his designer, Michael Travis, came up with this suit, and he wore it for the 100th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty. At Radio City Music Hall, he stepped out of a red, white, and blue Rolls Royce, which we have on hand in our car gallery, and he stepped out wearing these hot pants, and what a statement he made. Once again, everything done in fun. And, you know, my favorite Liberace quote, my clothes may look funny, but they're making me the money. Kind of says it all.
Did Liberace really start this, you know, the Las Vegas glitz, or did it pre-exist?
You know, Liberace actually started it, and we will give him credit for that. Later, Elvis came to be. He came to the town. He saw Liberace's show, and believe it or not, he really wasn't such a big hit when he first came to town. Liberace was the big entertainer. I guess the colonel called and said, Liberace, he would like to see, Elvis would like to see your show. We have a very famous picture where they've exchanged jackets, and Liberace's wearing Elvis's plain striped coat. Elvis has on the sparkly. I think he was trying to tell him something even back then, and they remained very good friends. And later, think about it. Elvis came back to Las Vegas wearing the jumpsuit with all of the stones and the high collar and belt. So I think he was some inspiration for that.
You like this one? Yeah. It's one of my favorites. It's not the loudest outfit in my wardrobe, but it's the most expensive. Yeah. You know why? Because of the buttons. They're real diamond buttons. Yeah. In fact, the buttons cost more than the suit. But I couldn't come out just in the buttons. Coax me. Gershwin.
Chance to meet Liberace yourself?
No, I did not. Actually, I'm from Virginia, and I remember that black and white show. I was a young girl. I was actually only 6 years old, and my parents watched it faithfully, and I, you know, I remember that very clearly. Even though Liberace did not wear the costumes at that time, he was still the ultimate showman. Since I started at the museum, I've been here since 2000. Of course, I got a lot of information to read when I first arrived. And one of the things they said is that in the 50s, when they were filming television shows, they actually told the entertainers not to look into the camera. But Liberace was much smarter than that. First thing he did, he had Baldwin Piano take the wood top off of the piano and replace it with plexiglass. Okay, now the camera could see through there. And guess what? Liberace would smile and wink, and it was just like he was talking to you. I always joke. I said, I remember my mom saying to my dad, look, Eddie, you can see he's such a nice young man. And, you know, and I really have that vivid memory. This man knew what he was doing. And even some of the effects, it looked like the piano was on fire once. I mean, I remember this. Once again, even without the costumes, a real showman.
Remember what Liberace was wearing the first time you saw him?
Pink, hot pink. It was great. I never saw a man like that before in my life. I'm from South Dakota, you know, farming country, hillbilly country, mountain country, redneck, red state country. And he had a pink suit, pink cape, pink shoes to die for. And I said, that is a man. It takes a real man to wear something like that.
Will Collins is a Liberace tribute artist. Indeed, he's the only one with the legal right to use Liberace's moniker of Mr. Showmanship on stage.
How did you happen to start doing this?
Well, I started because I was working in a restaurant where everyone was a costumed employee. And whatever I had on, people kept telling me, oh, gee, you look so much and you sound so much like Liberace. If I was a cowboy, an Indian, because back in the day, like in the 80s, village people were very big. And I liked my Indian costume the most. But no matter what I had on, people always said, you favor Liberace and you look like Liberace, you sound like Liberace. And I just happened to play the piano. And so then the first thing I did is I went to see him in concert. And then I could see what other people were seeing. Then the second thing I did after I moved to Las Vegas, because everybody said, you have to go to Vegas. And I did it because I believe in pursuing a dream. I came here. People met me. They liked me. They had me meet him. I really became more interested, you know, and I started honing my craft. Unfortunately for our friend, Mr. Liberace, you know, he passed on, but then it opened the door for me.
Becoming a tribute artist to him helped you come to terms with your gayness, right?
It did. There was something a little psychological about that whole process because I'm from a small town in South Dakota. And there's a lot to learn when you venture out and you go into bigger cities and you go to other places. And then we live in different times now, too. But what I learned from doing Liberace is that everyone was making, you know, their own connotations and their own evaluations and things about him and about his lifestyle and his personal lifestyle. I started paying attention, and then it helped me kind of opened up the gates for me to come out myself.
So when did you actually start doing this as a paid gig? And were there like, you know, a few decades or years that were like really hot for you doing this?
Right after he passed away, I went into a show where at that time the show was called Legends in Concert, but at that time someone had to become deceased before you could go into the show. And I had called up after he passed on, which was really a big surprise because no one expected it. I called up and I said, hi, this is Liberace. And I went through the whole thing, and they had me in the show before he was cold in the grave.
He never... Even his diagnosis of death was changed after he died. His personal physician said that it was something that was not AIDS, and then the coroner exhumed his body, I believe, and did the autopsy again and determined he died of AIDS. But he never was open about his sexuality. Tell us what you know about that.
Well, that's the part that that I consider he was like old school in the way that he thought and the way that he thought he should live.
He actually sued a London newspaper for an article that the article didn't even say he's gay, but it used some words that he didn't like. What do you know about that?
They said he was sugary and he was sappy and, you know, in their own way, that he was effeminate and that he came across the stage in a way that women would fall all over him and certain kinds of men and things, and he didn't like it. That was back in the 50s and the 60s. He just certainly did not like that at all. He won. He won, which is irony in a way, because he still was Liberace in the way that how we know him.
He actually had a home in Palm Springs, and the Cloisters, that is the home he passed away in, it was his main residence. And a lot of the things that you see in this bedroom exhibit were from that home. I do want to point out this beautiful crystal collection that you see. Remember I told you Liberace had three command performances for Queen Elizabeth, and he dined with her, and he actually fell in love with this particular crystal. It's Mosier crystal, and the pattern is called Splendid. You can actually go on their website and see this pattern. He owned one of the largest sets ever made, but Queen Elizabeth, when he dined with her, she was kind enough to give him two of the goblets. And we have those on display in one of the cases, and it hers, of course, in the center, there's the E for Elizabeth. Now, we featured hers on either side of Liberace's goblet, and we always get our guests to come and get as close as they can and try to say, well, do you see any difference in those goblets? So let me ask you, can you see anything that's different?
Well, right off the bat, I see there's a crown over the one that says L.
That's exactly right. She was the royalty, but he got the crown.
So which one's the real queen? Sadly, the Liberace Museum closed in 2010 after a 31-year run in Las Vegas. The Liberace Foundation, established by Liberace himself to award scholarships to performing and creative arts students, lives on. The foundation retains the museum's incredible collection of costumes, cars, pianos, and jewelry, and is reportedly devising plans to once again exhibit Liberace's treasures to the public.
Would you like to hear my theme song?
Yes!
Okay. I beseech you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way. Oh, I feel like the Pope. The children's carousel. The chestnut trees. The wishing well. Thank you. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's warm and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We bring you topics, guests, and perspectives you aren't likely to hear anywhere else. We hope that's of value to you and that you'll help keep Out in the Bay going strong with a tax-deductible contribution at our website, outinthebay.com. While you're there, you can find 6 months' worth of archives, sign up for weekly podcasts, and take us with you on your mobile device by signing up for Stitcher. It's all free. It's all on our website, outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the San Francisco Frontrunners Pride Run, June 29th in Golden Gate Park, sponsored by Wells Fargo financial advisor Dan Jorenstad and dentist Peter Farmer. Information on the Pride Run is online at sfpriderun.org. Out in the Bay is also supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS. That's sfbar.org/LRIS. Or by phoning 415-989-1616.